This is Tuesday, the 13th of June, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Coming your way, the Congress of the United States intensifies its investigation into the possibility of Russian meddling in the U.S. presidential election.
I suspect that there will be books written about this for years and decades to come. Quite frankly, we have not seen anything remotely like this.
That is VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman. He'll join us in a moment. Also ahead, the North Koreans release an American prisoner as a U.S. basketball star arrives in Pyongyang. And almost 30% of us worldwide are carrying around too much weight. All on today's International Edition. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions is set to testify in a public hearing today with members of a Senate panel, a panel likely to ask him about his contacts with the Russian ambassador and his involvement in the firing of the head of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. The Senate Intelligence Committee hearing is the latest step in multiple ongoing investigations into Russian meddling in last year's U.S. presidential election. On the line with us from the Capitol is VOA Senate correspondent Michael Bowman. Michael, what do you think about the main focus? What's it going to be for today's questioning of the Attorney General?
Ira, of all the witnesses that we have seen in this Russia investigation, Jeff Sessions is the person closest to President Donald Trump that we will have heard from so far. Jeff Sessions was the first U.S. senator to endorse Donald Trump. He appeared at numerous rallies with then-candidate Trump, donning the famous red Make America Great Again hats that were ubiquitous during the campaign. And he was rewarded with the post of Attorney General as America's top law enforcement officer. And what senators want to know is why, during his confirmation hearing back in January, why did Jeff Sessions omit any reference to meetings that he had that he later acknowledged with Russia's ambassador? Were there any other meetings with any Russian officials of any kind? Jeff Sessions later recused himself from the Russia investigation. Senators want to know, did he have a role in President Trump's firing of former FBI Director James Comey? And they want to know to what extent Jeff Sessions has, in fact, adhered to his recusal from this investigation. There are many unanswered questions that senators want to hear.
Yeah, and it seems like there is a whole array of areas that could be asked of the Attorney General. You know, what is happening as far as his standing in a room with President Trump when James Comey came in and the president allegedly ordered everybody out of the room, and Sessions seemed to be a little wary of leaving the room at that time.
James Comey spoke last week before the Senate Intelligence Committee, and he made clear that he was very uncomfortable in his private one-on-one meetings with President Trump and the one-on-one telephone conversations that they had. And he was looking to Attorney General Jeff Sessions, among others, to shield him from direct pressure from the White House and from the president in particular. Senators want to know why, in fact, Jeff Sessions did not intervene, why he allowed, in essence, James Comey to be cornered by President Trump shortly before James Comey was fired.
And then there is the question of Robert Mueller, the special prosecutor. There have been reports through the last 24 hours or so of a friend of President Trump saying that he was considering firing the U.S. special prosecutor. And that question probably is going to be asked of Mr. Sessions, the attorney general, today, but was asked already of his assistant by another committee.
Ira, everyone in a position of importance in the Justice Department is assumed to have a certain degree of separation from the political winds coming from the White House. Nevertheless, they all serve at the pleasure of the president. And so a president, if he so chooses, can, as we've already seen, fire the FBI director, can fire a special counsel, or can at least request that the special counsel be removed and replaced. Deputy Attorney General Rod Rosenstein, who was also nominated by Donald Trump and named Robert Mueller, a former FBI director, as the special counsel to head the Justice Department's investigation, he has said that he would not remove Robert Mueller without good cause, that he would not simply bow to the whims of the White House. And if one is looking for, I suppose, a silver lining in all of this tension-filled web of questions and this entire sort of cloud, as Donald Trump himself is reported to have said, hanging over the Russia investigation, I would say it's this. This is a town that is controlled by the Republicans. They control Congress. They control the White House. Yet a man who was nominated by Donald Trump saw fit to name a special counsel. Committees that are controlled by Republicans are holding investigations into this matter. One could make an argument that the structure, that America's institutions are in fact functioning even despite all the stresses, and the stresses are considerable, that we are witnessing in this really unprecedented era, Ira.
Yeah, this is an unprecedented era for those of us in the United States. As you and I both know, this has been making front page news. But what does this mean? What do you think it should mean to other people living in other countries around the world?
I suspect that there will be books written about this for years and decades to come. Quite frankly, we have not seen anything remotely like this. I mean, of course, and I almost hesitate to draw this comparison. I am old enough just barely to remember Watergate, when Richard Nixon was forced to resign after playing a role in those who broke into the Democratic National Committee. But this involves foreign espionage. This involves, as far as the Russia investigation, this involves a foreign nation meddling in our election. And the number of questions emanating from that and the scope and the potential as far as damage is truly something that this country is experiencing for the first time, and something that I suspect that Americans for a very long time thought that we were immune from, that these sorts of things happened in other countries. Well, now we have it on our doorstep.
Michael Bowman covers the U.S. Senate for the Voice of America. Michael, once again, thanks for being with us.
Always a pleasure, Ira.
Another major story we're covering for you today. North Korea has released from prison an American college student who was sentenced to a 15-year term for attempting to steal a propaganda poster in 2016. In a written statement, the U.S. Secretary of State Rex Tillerson said 22-year-old Otto Warmbier has been released from prison and is currently traveling back to the United States to be reunited with his family. Now, the Washington Post reports that Warmbier was medically evacuated from North Korea while in a coma. He's due to return home to Cincinnati, Ohio, Tuesday evening. According to the Post, he had been in a coma for over a year. The announcement of Warmbier's release came as former basketball star Dennis Rodman traveled Tuesday to North Korea on a trip he said he hopes will open a door between U.S. President Donald Trump and leaders in Pyongyang. Rodman is friends with the North Korea leader Kim Jong-un. He traveled to North Korea previously in 2013, where he organized a pickup basketball game that included other former National Basketball Association stars and sang Happy Birthday to Kim. Now, Rodman also, Andrew Palczewski is here with me, was on Donald Trump's television show.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't think he was fired, but we don't know because I never watched the show. But nevertheless, I mean, he knows both the president of the United States and the leader of North Korea. What are people saying on social media? Is there a connection, do you think?
That is the big question. Dennis Rodman, of course, appearing on Celebrity Apprentice, which was hosted and created by President Donald Trump, of course, before he became president. So lots of questions about the timing of this release and this trip. People wondering, was Rodman acting perhaps as an emissary, or as our colleague Sonny Young put it, as he saw in a joke online, and we were talking about this just before the show, jokes that Rodman could be the new U.S. ambassador to North Korea. Of course, we don't have diplomatic relations with North Korea, so that would not be the case. But
maybe that does fit, doesn't
well,
it?
Well, it's a lot of these questions that are floating around, some serious, some lighthearted. But many experts are saying that this release of Otto Warmbier does not have anything to do with Rodman's visit. If anything, if there's any connection, it may be a way for North Korea to distract from either Rodman's visit by releasing Warmbier or vice versa. You know, it's not clear exactly what the motivations are behind this. But Rodman putting out on his social media accounts that he's back in North Korea, he said he will discuss his mission when he returns. Nothing more than that. So very curious statement from Dennis Rodman.
But everything Rodman has ever done has been very mysterious.
He is a person that is known more for his antics off the basketball court than perhaps his play on the court.
So he was also a great player.
And that's saying something. He was a great player, and he's still better known for his antics off the court. So it's a lot of question marks from people, and they're wondering what's going to happen, but they're eagerly watching Dennis Rodman's Twitter account and social media to see what he might say.
Now, what about the Sessions testimony? What are people saying about that?
A lot of questions there as well about what Jeff Sessions is going to talk about. The interesting thing, and I've talked about this in the past, with the Comey hearing, I said after that James Comey hearing that this would not be the last instance where we saw a hearing trend like that. And that's the case with this Jeff Sessions hearing. We're seeing people talk about it. It's trending on social media. And just as we saw with the Comey hearing, where Twitter partnered with Bloomberg News to air that hearing live, Twitter is partnering this time with PBS NewsHour to air this Sessions hearing live. So this is kind of the new vehicle for people to watch these hearings. You don't have to have a television. You can just watch it right on your computer, on your smartphone.
Now, they don't have to limit it to a certain number of characters as they're doing this live. Is that correct?
No, they paid enough money in that partnership that they can air it beginning to end without any restrictions.
Are you speaking under oath, Mr. Attorney General? Yeah, okay, that would be it. Andrew Palaszewski, following social media for us here on International Edition. Among the top stories in the world, U.S. Attorney Jeff Sessions is set to testify in a public hearing today where he's likely to be asked about his contacts with the Russian ambassador and his involvement in the firing ahead of the head of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. Not easy for me to say. North Korea has released from prison an American college student who was sentenced to a 15-year term for attempting to steal a propaganda poster in 2016. Word is that he is in a coma. President Trump is assailing the latest federal appellate court decision blocking his executive order restricting travel from six majority Muslim countries where terrorist attacks have occurred. And Panama's president announces his country will switch diplomatic ties from Taiwan to China. Expanded coverage and more on the VOAnews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
A study in the New England Journal of Medicine proposes around 2.2 billion, or almost 30% of the world's population, is suffering from various health problems related to being obese or even overweight. The study also finds that a growing percentage of the global population is dying from these weight-related health conditions. The researchers found in 2015 that about 40% of the 4 million who died from causes attributed to excess body weight had a body mass index, or BMI, that was below the level considered obese. The authors of the study say their findings represent a growing and disturbing global public health crisis. The study is based on research that involved 68.5 million people in 195 countries and territories from 1980 to 2015. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
We continue on International Edition. Islamist militants holding parts of a Philippine city are killing civilians who try to flee while using others as orderlies and cooks. That's reported by the French news agency AFP. Meanwhile, the U.S. Defense Secretary, President Trump said in a news conference, will be held soon. That conference will be held to outline U.S. strategy to defeat the Islamic State Sunni insurgency, also known as ISIS.
We've had tremendous success against ISIS in our fight in the Middle East. We're doing very, very well. We're going to be having a news conference in 2 weeks on that fight, and you'll see numbers that you would not have believed. And frankly, if you look back to even 6 months ago, you wouldn't have believed it was possible.
Destroying ISIS was among the president's most oft-repeated campaign pledges. However, 6 months into his presidency, his strategy remains unclear, although the U.S. is backing Iraqi security forces against the IS stronghold of Mosul and the Kurdish and Arab militia in Syria assaulting the IS-held city of Raqqa. Northeastern University terrorism analyst Max Abrams told VOA's Victor Beatty that the U.S. president deserves a lot of credit in focusing so many resources into defeating Islamic State.
When Trump says that he is going to get a report on our success against Islamic State, especially in its stronghold of Iraq and in Syria, there are all sorts of metrics that he could list off. In addition to land, he could talk about revenues way down, an inability to pay fighters, growing difficulties in terms of Islamic State defection. Furthermore, the propaganda personnel have been killed off. And so the quality of propaganda and the amount of propaganda are all way down. So I will be interested in those figures. But one thing for sure is that Islamic State metrics will be down across the board.
Well, we have an audio message purporting to come from a spokesman of Islamic State calling on followers to launch attacks in the United States, Europe, Russia, Australia, Iraq, Syria, Iran, and the Philippines during the Islamic holy month of Ramadan.
The biggest victims of Islamic State, ironically, are Muslims. They have been physically attacked probably more than any other people. When Islamic State commits violence, because it calls itself Islamic State and claims to be acting on behalf of Allah, this reflects very poorly, especially among those who don't know much about Islam.
Indonesia's military chief Tuesday warned that IS militants have a presence in nearly all provinces of the world's most populous Muslim country. General Gatot Nurmantio said they're almost all sleeper cells. He also said his country is joining with the Philippines and Malaysia to deploy joint patrols to prevent further infiltration as IS militants battle Philippine security forces in the city of Marawi on Mindanao Island. This is VOA.
Do you love music from Africa and the world? VOA has the latest hits, interviews with the artists, and we are glad to take your requests. The Voice of America has what you're looking for. We have music shows to please everyone. Join us on the radio or on the internet to listen day or night. Go to voanews.com and voaafrica.com and click on your favorite program. Just follow your ears. Music from Africa and the world. We've got it on VOA.
Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA podcasts a try.
VOAnews.com.
Visit our website at VOAnews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
We continue on VOA's International Edition. In recent years, China has become an increasingly attractive market for Hollywood producers, that despite tight state controls. Chinese investors also have been looking at opportunities in the U.S. film and entertainment industry. While some people express concern over these growing ties, others say they're mutually beneficial. VOA's Elizabeth Lee has more from Los Angeles.
When it comes to movies, the ties between Hollywood and China are deepening.
When people collaborate on the making of anything artistic, there's an emotional pull inside of that. And if it works well, you not only have a great business, you also have a great diplomatic cohesion between the two countries.
In August, U.S. Asia Institute trustee and Hollywood executive Chris Fenton will be taking a group of U.S. lawmakers to China to look at the country's entertainment and media industry and encourage more Chinese investment in Hollywood.
It's a very large piece of the pie because it's roughly $7 billion. And with the U.S. in a flat sort of growth period in the traditional exhibition space of movies at roughly $11 billion, you can see how close China's becoming to being the number one market in the world.
China is exerting soft power through media and the movies to make itself more attractive to the outside world. Secondly, they also want to compete with Hollywood. Film and China expert Stanley Rosen says there is also another benefit to China with deeper relations and more Chinese investments in Hollywood.
They're also trying to learn as much as they can about storytelling, marketing, distribution, and that's one of the reasons for the investment.
Some critics have warned that too much Chinese investment in Hollywood is dangerous. Last year, 16 members of Congress wrote a letter to the U.S. Government Accountability Office expressing concern about what they called China's efforts to censor topics and exert propaganda controls in American media.
I don't see it as a particular problem at this point because most of those investments do not come with any strings attached. Because Hollywood studios are well aware that if they start making films that are so blatantly favoring China, that there's going to be a backlash.
Rosen says even if films show China in a positive light, Beijing's hardline policies overshadow attempts to soften its image through such soft power projects.
Arresting lawyers, human rights lawyers, kidnapping people from Hong Kong or Thailand, all of these things affect Chinese soft power, no matter what they're spending in terms of money. So everybody assumes anything that happens that's China-related, the government has to be involved in some sense.
But on the industry level, China is benefiting from closer ties with Hollywood by learning how to make better movies and marketing them. For those in Hollywood, working with China is simply smart economics.
If you're thinking like a business person, there is a certain creative vision you should have for the content you're making that if you want to call it self-censorship, that's fine, or you call it just good business.
Good business for Hollywood right now means wooing China and its box office. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
That will wrap up our program for this day. You've been listening to International Edition. Find us at voanews.com. You can like us on Facebook if you want it, VOA Now. And follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. Our thanks to our director, Patrice Martin, our engineer, John Dryden. I'm Ira Melman in Washington. Have a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In an address to the United Nations Human Rights Council in Geneva, U.S. Permanent Representative to the UN, Ambassador Nikki Haley, said the United States is looking carefully at the Council and U.S. participation in it. Ambassador Haley made clear that the U.S. considers the protection and promotion of human rights crucially important. Respect for human rights, she said, is deeply intertwined with peace and security, and human rights violations often serve as triggers for instability and conflict. Strong resolutions adopted by the Human Rights Council, Ambassador Haley stressed, can give hope to people who are fighting for justice, democracy, and human rights, and they can pave the way for accountability. In a speech later in the day to the Graduate Institute of Geneva, Ambassador Haley pointed out that when the Council fails to act properly or fails to act at all, it undermines its own credibility and the cause of human rights. The United States does not seek to leave the Council, but, Ambassador Haley said, critically necessary reforms must be enacted to reestablish its legitimacy. The first is the UN must take steps to keep the worst rights abusers from sitting on the Council. To do this, election procedures must be changed. Now, regional blocs nominate slates of predetermined candidates that never face any competition for votes, Ambassador Haley observed. We must change the elections so countries are forced to make the case for membership based on their records, not on their promises. Secondly, the Council's biased Agenda Item 7, singling out Israel for automatic criticism, must be removed. This relentless, pathological campaign against a country that actually has a strong human rights record makes a mockery, not of Israel, but of the Council itself, said Ambassador Haley. These changes are the minimum necessary to resuscitate the Council as a respected advocate of universal human rights. Ambassador Haley urged all like-minded countries to join in making the Human Rights Council reach its intended purpose. She emphasized that the United States will never give up the cause of universal human rights, in the Council or anywhere.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.